This has been a teeter-totter sermon. Tell you that up front. It's one that when I put this sermon series together, it was in and then it was out. And then it was in and then it was out. And then the video clip, it was in and then it was out. And when you try to put the little fill-in-the-blank for the bulletin, well, you know what? That's in, but it could have easily been out because it didn't lead itself very well to fill in the blanks. And so I'm going to do my best to make sure we hit every point that we left a blank there for this morning, but it just didn't fit. But as hard as I tried to throw this topic on the scrap heap and say, you know what, let's pick a different person. I mean, there's other faceless people I could pick. God just wouldn't let this one go away. And so I put it in. And so here we are. We've been looking at these faceless people in the Bible. They don't have a name. We don't know who they are. We don't know where they went. We've made a lot of stops along the way. And today we're going to start in Luke chapter 13, verses 10 through 17. It's an unusual story. It's an unusual story because of where it's happening. Remember, up until this point when we've been traveling with Jesus and looking at these faceless people, he's always been on the move. He's been out in this place or that place or traveling from here to there. And all of these people he's kind of met out in the public space. Not so much. Not so much for this particular person, or shall I say persons, because this story really isn't about who you think it's about. We're going to begin this morning with verses 10 through 13, because it sets the stage for what we're going to talk about this morning. On the Sabbath, Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues, and a woman was there who had been crippled by a spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not straighten up at all. When Jesus saw her, he called her forward and said to her, "Woman, you are set free from your infirmity." Then he put his hands on her, and immediately she straightened up and praised God. So here we have yet another miracle from a faceless person. Ironically, this woman didn't come looking for a miracle. Unlike all the other people, like the blind man that said, "Jesus, please heal me," like the lepers that stood on the hill and cried, "Jesus, please heal me." Like a woman suffering from bleeding who had made a plan on how to touch Jesus, "Please heal me." Well, this woman wasn't like that at all. She didn't come looking for healing at all. In fact, she was just kind of there. Now, let's tell you about this woman. You get the idea of this illness that she had. Well, it wasn't something she was born with. It says that she had been suffering for 18 years and she had to live in pain. I almost get the picture this is maybe some kind of an arthritic thing. I saw the video they had the hump and that she was hunched over, kind of like the Hunchback of Notre Dame. We don't know what it is, but for some reason, she couldn't straighten up. But here's the amazing thing I love about this woman. She's still honoring God. I mean, this woman had every excuse in the universe to just mail it in and catch the Jesus parade on television that night, right? This woman could have just stayed home and it would have been okay, right? She had every reason not to be where she was, but here she was at church honoring God. I think of Miss Fitzgerald when it comes to this. You know, when she came in, even when her back was hurt until it got to the point she physically couldn't move, you'd still see her come in, and when she went downstairs to Sunday school, one step at a time, she took it very slowly. We used to have a lady from where we came from. Her name was Geneva Hensley, and she had COPD. And she'd come into church every morning lugging her little oxygen tank behind her, and she never missed a Sunday. That was kind of this woman. And the amazing thing is that Jesus heals her. She didn't ask him to. She was just there to worship God. And it's like she didn't ask for it. She praises God for what he had done. That's this woman. That's the people that you would love to have just pews full of people like that. She was seeking nothing more from God than a lesson on how to live her life. Of course, the story isn't about the woman. She's not the faceless person we want to talk about this morning. Let's talk about this guy in verse 14. Indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, the synagogue leader said to the people, "There are 6 days for work, so come and be healed on those days, not on the Sabbath." Again, there's some irony. This woman didn't come to be healed. She came to worship. It was Jesus' compassion when he saw her that says, "Let me heal you. Let me help you. Let me change your life." And this leader, the clip doesn't do justice. The word there, he became indignant. Do you know what that word means? Now, when I think about the word, it means undignified is what I think. But that doesn't quite capture it. So I had to go and look it up. And here's what I found. The definition of indignant. A feeling characterized or expressed of strong displeasure is something considered unjust, offensive, or insulting. The second definition, showing anger because of something unjust or unworthy. And so I get this picture of this leader, and that's the surprising part. The leader of the synagogue, somebody that was there to look after the spiritual needs of people, well, he's rather upset. He sees what Jesus has done, and he comes forward and says, "What are you doing? You got 6 days to doing this kind of stuff. Leave the Sabbath alone." He's confrontational. Like I said, this man that they saw in the clip, he just kind of come up and gave his little speech, but understand, this man is confrontational. He's looking at Jesus. He's saying, "Jesus, this isn't the way things are done. Don't you know this is the Sabbath?" See, here's the truth. When we think about the word bondage, when it comes to this story, we always think about the woman. She wasn't in bondage. She was suffering with pain, but she wasn't in bondage. She was there worshiping freely. This man, he's completely living in bondage. He's shackled in his life. And so I want to take a look at it because I think a lot of us, even though we call ourselves living free, I think we're living with some shackles. And I think they look a lot like this man's. So I want to talk about the Sabbath. That is what got this man all upset. That is why this man is confronting Jesus, because Jesus healed on the Sabbath. And you know what? Think about this man for a second. He was a Jew, and if you remember, the Jews had been kicked out of their land a few times already. The Babylonians had taken them. The Assyrians had taken part of them. They had gone back and forth. They had struggled with the Philistines. They were now under Roman captivity. And the whole reason that God kept letting people take the people out of Israel, take Israel away from Israel, is the fact that they were not honoring God's commands. I think this man had learned his lesson. Now, in fact, if you look at the Scripture, you find out some things about the Sabbath. Keep in mind, God demonstrated the Sabbath. We find this in Genesis chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. "By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all of his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he had rested from all the work of creating, of the creating that he had done." The Sabbath wasn't man's idea. God created the Sabbath. And as we move through Scripture, we find out not only did God create the Sabbath, when he set his nation aside, when he brought Israel out, God ordained the Sabbath. Listen to Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 through 11. We know these verses. We call them the Ten Commandments. Right in those stones that Moses brought down from the hillside, he said, God said, "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do your work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath to do the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you or your son or your daughter, nor your male nor your female servant, nor your animals, nor your foreigner residing in the towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it, there's that word again, holy. The Sabbath was supposed to be set aside for something different. And you know, it wasn't like God created it and God made this commandment once. As he moved along with Israel, God reinforced the idea of the Sabbath. Only a few chapters later, in Exodus chapter 35, verses 1 through 3, Moses assembled the whole of Israel, the community, and said to them, "These are the things the Lord has commanded you. For 6 days work is to be done, but the seventh day shall be your holy day." Oh, wait a minute. Now it's not just supposed to be a holy day, it's supposed to be your holy day. A day of Sabbath rest to the Lord. Whoever does any work on it is to be put to death. Wow, this is God saying this. Do not light a fire in any of your dwellings on the Sabbath day. That sounds pretty strict, doesn't it? As a matter of fact, it was so strict, work wasn't the only thing. We always think they're not supposed to work. Keep in mind, the Sabbath affected every part of these people's lives. Listen to Leviticus chapter 23, verse 39. So beginning with the fifth day of the seventh month, after you have gathered the crops of the land, celebrate the festival to the Lord for 7 days. The first day is the Sabbath rest, and the eighth day is also the Sabbath rest. In other words, don't party on the Sabbath, Israel. It wasn't just work. It affected the way that they celebrated. It affected everything about their life. All you heard about was the Sabbath. It wasn't just a Moses thing. Jeremiah chapter 17, verses 19 through 22. This is what the Lord said to me. Go and stand at the gate of the people through which the kings of Judah go in and out. Stand also at the other gates of Jerusalem and say to them, hear the word of the Lord, you kings of Judah and you people of Judah and everyone living in Jerusalem who come through these gates. This is what the Lord said. Be careful not to carry a load on the Sabbath day or bring it through the gates of Jerusalem. Do not bring the load of your houses or do any work on the Sabbath, but keep the Sabbath day holy as I commanded your ancestry. Ezekiel joined into the Sabbath parade. Keep my Sabbath, that they may be a sign between us. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God. And I'm reading all these verses and I'm thinking about how upset this man got that Jesus had healed on the Sabbath. And you know what I'm thinking? Maybe he's got a point. I mean, if I had grew up in Jerusalem culture, and all I had ever heard was Sabbath, 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 Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath. Keep the Sabbath holy. Don't work on the Sabbath. Don't party on the Sabbath. You can't get married on the Sabbath. Nothing is to be done on the Sabbath. And all of a sudden, here comes this man who says he's from God. And as I look at it, I don't see him honoring the Sabbath. I expect there... we might get a little more indignant if Jesus came and broke some of our traditions. Wouldn't we? If we came in and Jesus got up to do his little lesson and he was wearing shorts and a t-shirt, you think we might be a little more indignant? Jesus came in and brought a drum set with him and a backup guitar and all that and set it up and said, this is how we're going to worship today. I got a feeling a few of us, even if it was Jesus, we'd be a little upset. Because this ain't just how we do church. See, here's the problem. Let's look at verses 15 and 16. The Lord, now that's Jesus, answered him, "You hypocrite, doesn't each of you on the Sabbath untie your ox or donkey from the stall and lead it out to give it water? Then should not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has kept bound for 18 long years, be set free on the Sabbath day from what bound her?" See, Jesus was looking at these people and said, you know what? I think you've missed the point. The reason you're so upset is that you missed the point of what God was trying to teach you about the Sabbath. You're upset and you're indignant because you're just looking at a law. A law that when you wrote up man's law on how to interpret the Sabbath, you wrote exceptions into it. I mean, after all, if your donkey's sitting outside and it's 120 degrees outside, and are you going to let your donkey stand there all day long with nothing to drink? No. You're going to untie him and lead him over to the water hole and let him drink, even if it's the Sabbath. Paul kind of talked about this over in Colossians chapter 2, verse 16. Therefore, do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink, or with regard to religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day. See, as we enter into the Old Testament, when we enter into the New Testament, this whole idea of Sabbath is changing, even for us. How many people were here yesterday evening worshiping? No, you were probably out having a cookout or having some fun. Your Sabbath is not on Saturday, which is technically the seventh day. We worship on Sunday. And that's contentious. There are some people that believe that's wrong, that we should still be worshiping on the Sabbath. You see, the idea here is that laws were given to govern, not to measure. That's important. You see, God didn't put the laws of the Ten Commandments there so that we could look at this law and decide who's holy and who's not. The idea behind the Ten Commandments were not so that I could take the Ten Commandments and look at your life and decide what's wrong with your life and tell you how to fix your life. The Ten Commandments were to take into me personally and measure my life by what God expects of me. You see the difference? The Israelites have been taking God's commands and deciding, well, you can't be a spiritual person because look at you. You're not doing this on the Sabbath. You can't be a spiritual person because look at you. You're not keeping... Look, I keep 9 commandments and you only keep 6. Therefore, I'm 20% better than you toward God. That's the way they were starting to do things. They didn't get it. Man's law always is going to need some exceptions. Keep in mind, that's what this was. God had laid out some very strict requirements from them and for the Sabbath. He even mentioned a few about not lighting fires and about not carrying loads. And I can see how that would be taken in to say you're not supposed to do anything. But God never made it so hard fast on any law. That's a man thing. And so we have to learn how to make some exceptions. So if you have God's Word with you today, let me ask you, you're probably sitting somewhere around Luke chapter 13. Turn back a few pages to Luke chapter 6. Because really what I want to look at for us as people, how do we go about making exceptions to the rule? Because you know what? For every tradition or steadfast thing we have in the church, there's always going to be something that challenges that. And when do we say, no, we're drawing the line here, we can't change this, we'll go no further? Or when do we say, you know what? There are exceptions to things. We can't be so staunch and traditional that we can never move on anything. We have to figure out how to make some exceptions. So we're going to be over in Luke chapter 6 for the remainder of this this discussion. And let's look at the first issue that Jesus has with this Sabbath thing. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and his disciples began to pick some heads of grain, rub them in their hands, and eat the kernels. Some of the Pharisees asked, "Why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" So here's the issue. First of all, you missed we always focus on the picking the heads. We pick the little thing there. Keep in mind what was probably really upsetting. They were on the move. They were traveling on the Sabbath, which you weren't allowed to do. As a matter of fact, the Pharisees had written into the Israelite law that you were not allowed to take more than 40 steps away from your house on the Sabbath day unless it was to come to the synagogue. You were allowed 40 steps, basically a little perimeter from you. And if you went 41 on the 41st step, you were ungodly. That's what they had started saying. So here are Jesus' disciples and apostles, and they're moving along and they're traveling. And as they're traveling, this happens, you know, if you take a little trip, just like even when you get in the car, you get about a mile away from the house and the kids are like, "I need a snack." And it just happens. Well, they're traveling and they're walking and you know what? They need a snack. And they're happening by a grain field, and it was tradition in there that the grain fields were left open, and travelers were allowed. They weren't stealing. They were allowed, as they were going through the grain fields, to take their hands and run it up the grain and mush the grain and consume it. It was perfectly legal, but not on the Sabbath, because that's the equivalent of making bread. And so here's the Pharisees having an issue with the Sabbath day, and Jesus answers them, hey, look, let me tell you the first exception to the rule, and we can make this apply across everything in our life. The exception is found in verses 3 and 4. Jesus answered them, have you never read that David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and taking the consecrated bread, he ate what was lawful only for the priest to eat, and he also gave some to his companions. So here we go. Jesus takes their story, and he says, hey, look, okay, you say it's unlawful. Just remember, even God, remember the priests? There was this bread, it was called the showbread, and it was put out there in the temple, and it was only supposed to be consumed by the priest. That was what God said. Do you know something? David and his army, when they were famished and they came to the temple, God made an exception for them. God didn't turn them away hungry. God said, you know what? Exception one, need overrides the law. We need to remember that. Any tradition we set up, any rule we make, any religious thing that we do, the moment it interferes with genuine physical need, sometimes we have to set the law aside. Sometimes we have to set the rules aside. Sometimes we have to make exceptions. Even if it means sometimes, you know what? Maybe you'll miss a Sunday of church because there's a need out there that you need to go meet. There's somebody that's in need and you need to go visit them. You need to go, you know what? I think God's okay with that. We get so stuck on the fact that we have to live inside these rules, and Jesus is saying, don't be so stuck. God's not. He could even make an exception for the showbread thing, which was a big deal because you know where the showbread was kept? In the holy place. Not the Holy of Holies, in the holy place. So that means not only did they have to eat the showbread, somebody had to go get the showbread, which means they probably broke a couple rules. Jesus is saying, don't get so stuck on the rules, people. The rules were set there to govern you, not to measure you. So, what about the second one? We're going to go to verses 6 and 7. Staying right there in Luke chapter 6. On another Sabbath. You think Jesus is trying to put a stick in their cage? I mean, just think about this. On this Sabbath he did this. On that Sabbath he did this. On this Sabbath he's trying to do this. It just seems like Jesus is going out of his way to make their life uncomfortable, breaking their rules just so that he could get their attention. I think that's a point. I think Jesus is doing what he's doing because he needs them to see it's not about the rules and regulations. On another Sabbath, he went into the synagogue and was teaching a man who was there and his right hand was shriveled. The Pharisees and the teachers were looking for a reason to accuse him, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. I got to find this one kind of amusing because here we are back in here and there's a teaching thing going on and this man walks in with a shriveled hand and the Pharisees are just sitting there. Is he going to do it? Is he going to give me a reason to fuss at him? Come on, Jesus, you can do it, do it. They're almost like they're cheering him on, they're egging him on. And Jesus tells the man to stretch out his hand and he heals him. And you know what happens? The Pharisees get upset. Of course they were going to get upset because they were looking for a reason to be upset. And so when Jesus provided them a reason, they took full advantage of it. They got upset. Because once again, Jesus had violated the rule. And so Jesus begins to teach them in verses 8 and 9. This is what Jesus says. But Jesus knew what they were thinking. It's funny, he didn't even wait for him to talk this time. He didn't even wait for him to get up and voice their concern. He just looks right into their hearts and their minds. Don't ever forget that. You can tell everybody all you want about you got it all straight. Jesus can see right into your heart and mind. But Jesus knew what they were thinking and said to the man with the shriveled hand, get up, stand up in front of everyone. So he got up and stood there. Then Jesus said to them, I ask you, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or evil, to save a life or destroy it? The exception? God's mercy overrides man's law. When you come face to face with a situation that requires mercy, you know what? It doesn't matter what the rules and regulations are. It doesn't matter what the laws the church set up. It doesn't matter what you think. God has given you an opportunity to show mercy. That takes precedence over the other. Even if it means you'll be late for a church meeting. Even if it means that maybe you'll have to go somewhere that you really aren't comfortable. Even if it means that, God says, my mercy overrides the law. Because what's better, to do evil or good? What was the point of the Sabbath? The point of the Sabbath was not to set up this rule or regulation where everybody's supposed to come and sit into a chair and sit there and look at each other and make sure we have attendance and everybody's set up and dressed up correctly. That wasn't the point of the Sabbath. What did God say? Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Don't use it just like every other day. Don't look for an excuse not to worship God. Make it a priority to worship God, even to the point that you set aside a day to worship God. But you know what? When God gives you ministry opportunities, sometimes the rules have to change. We have to be a little more flexible. And when you don't, you become indignant. You begin looking at people and accusing them. You begin looking at scores like schools look at test scores these days. We begin to start judging people who's spiritual and who's not. It's like we think we're the keeper of the Lamb's Book of Life and who's getting into who's heaven and who's not. It's not the truth. That's God's book. It's not my job to decide who's going to heaven and who's not. My job is to minister to the people God puts right in front of me every day. That's a big difference. I got a feeling some people will get upset if you start doing church that way. Got a feeling we'd be upset if one Sunday we say, you know what, so-and-so has a need, so we're just going to shut down worship that day and we're just going to go over here and we're going to do it. I got a feeling there'd be some people that were upset about that. But that's what Jesus is kind of proposing here. The Sabbath was the Sabbath because God asked them not to forget Him. But the ironic thing is, in the process of remembering not to forget God by keeping the Sabbath, they forgot God by keeping the Sabbath. Wow. Do we do that? Do we sometimes get so stuck in what we are doing for God that we forget what we are doing is for God and not for me? That's when we become indignant. We get upset. So let me tell you, we need to change our focus. John chapter 7, verses 21 through 24 reads, Jesus said to them, I did one miracle, and you are all amazed. Yet because Moses gave you circumcision, though actually it did not come from Moses, but from the patriarchs, you circumcised a boy on the Sabbath. Oh, wow, Jesus is calling them out here. Now, if a boy can be circumcised on the Sabbath so that the law of Moses may not be broken, why are you angry for me for healing a man's whole body on the Sabbath? Pay close attention to verse 24. Stop judging by mere appearances, but instead judge correctly. It's funny, in setting up the Sabbath, God created an automatic conflict for them. Because back in Leviticus, when God's setting out about circumcision, He commands the Israelites, under no exception, you are supposed to circumcise a little boy by the seventh day of his birth. Okay. So what happens if the little boy is born and you count 7 days, and now he has to be circumcised, and it's the Sabbath? Well, the doctor's got to work. Or whoever's going to do the circumcision's got to work. That means they got to sterilize the equipment to do this, right? That means they got to light a fire. Wait a minute, didn't God just say a few verses ago, don't light a fire on the Sabbath? See, Jesus is pointing out the folly of how they have interpreted what they were reading. They try to draw hard and fast laws to make themselves godly. They made themselves godless. Instead, Jesus is telling them two simple words: live free. Now, notice I did not say live free for all. Okay, this is not a sermon telling you that I'm okay, you're okay, and whatever you want to do, you can do as long as it doesn't. That's not the philosophy here. Okay? This is not everything is okay as long as I can find some way to justify it, because if I dig hard enough in Scripture, I can find a way to justify anything I want to do. After all, Solomon says there's a time and season for everything, right? So I just got to say I'm in season and I'm good, right? No, that's not what we're saying here. That's not the live free. The live free is don't be so hard and fast to the rules and regulations. Don't think that just because we've done something this way for hundreds of years that that's the way it was supposed to be done. Remember, Israel had been honoring this Sabbath day for thousands of years. Ever since they left Egypt, they had been honoring this Sabbath day. Can you imagine how hard it was for them to look at somebody who says, I am the Son of God. Let me tell you something, you missed the point of the Sabbath. I got a feeling there were quite a few indignant people about this. See, the idea of living free is allow God to lead you. Make it a priority to come and be near God, but when God leads you to do something that maybe is a little outside of the norm, live free. Go and do it. And especially if it meets one of those exceptions, you're showing mercy or you're meeting a need, God says live free. And you know what? If somebody wants to judge you by the rules, that's their problem, not yours. It's funny, this woman that came to be freed from bondage, again, she wasn't looking for it. She was already living free. Crippled and all. Hobbling in. She's still living free. But the Pharisee? Bound. God doesn't want us living that way. We're going to do a time of decision, and let me encourage you. Start taking stock of what it is that's holding you in bondage. What is it that's keeping you crippled from a relationship with God? Maybe it is something in your life that, you know what, it isn't supposed to be there. Maybe you have got some sin in your life that you need to deal with. Use this time. Live free. God can forgive any sin you've got in your life. But you have to take it to Him. Maybe you're living in bondage because you've never met this Jesus guy. Come on forward. We'll show you what it means to live free. For the vast majority of us, though, we're living free, not... we're not living free. Because you know what? We're just kind of a little pinched. We're just kind of a little wedged between what we think is right and wrong, and I just got to stay with inside the lines. It's like, you know, they teach your kid when they're in kindergarten, don't scribble scrabble, color inside the lines. My kids always had a problem with that because my kids were like, just give me a blank piece of paper. I'd be much happier. But you get the lines and we want people to color between the lines. Well, that's how we do religion a lot of times. We tell people to color between the lines. No. God wants you to draw your own picture. Maybe you need to use this time of decision to make that kind of a choice. God, I want to live free. It's going to mean you have to change some of your life. Would you please stand and we're going to pray.